Ever thought about Botox but worried you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread, and the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises, just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Hi, this is PodSave the UK. I'm Nish Kumar.
And I'm Coco Khan.
And this week, it's just us and you as we rifle through our mailbag to answer some of your burning questions.
That's right. No guests. Just the two of us. We can make it if we try. And when we sorry.
Now we have to pay Bill Withers loyalties.
Will we do a sort of trumpet interlude in the mailbag episode? Yeah, well, it's the mailbag episode, so we'll be answering the big head scratchers. How do we tackle the climate crisis? How long will the United Kingdom stay united? And what should we call the listeners of this pod?
So basically, I'm hoping that we haven't seen any of these things.
Yeah.
One of the fun things about the mailbag episode is the producers redact the information that they give us in the script. And so we haven't seen any of these questions. I hope that this is the first that you're hearing of us.
Yeah.
And we've not had to cut something in because Nigel Farage has tried to launch a citizen's arrest on Count Binface or something. I'm just hoping that something deeply stupid hasn't happened that's had to cut into this. So let's just go straight in with the first question. Mm-hmm. So the first question is, what should listeners of the pod be known as?
Okay, so there's some suggestions here. Bin facers, like wall facers from Free Body Problem. Pod saviours, PSUK-ing legends, PSUK-ers, but pronounced suckers, so the P is silent, suckers. Or UKEs, UKEs? I think that's how you would say that.
UKEs.
Do you know what? I was in the hairdresser the other day,
yeah,
and my Gen Z hairdresser was talking about someone glazing someone.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard this word before, glazing.
Yeah.
Apparently young people say it to say that someone's like great, to gas them up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I've been thinking about that. So maybe,
yeah,
because there's a love relationship between us,
yeah,
and the listeners, we could call them donuts.
Because we're glazing them all the time.
Yeah.
I still think it sounds like an insult. Donut sounds like something. It sounds like something someone in EastEnders would say to each someone, "You fucking donut."
Yeah, but that's why I think that's why it works, because
right, okay,
some people would think it would be abuse, but the real heads know that it's love.
So are we going to start referring to our listeners as donuts? We haven't actually adopted any of the things that have been suggested by the listeners. We've been very undemocratic in this.
Yeah.
Pod saviors sounds too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yuki's, I don't mind Yuki's.
Yuki sounds like what you would, you know, walkies with a dog.
I quite like suckers, but the P is silent. I don't mind that as a piece of wordplay. I mean, I think bin faces, I think we'd face a copyright injunction from Count Binface.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think probably.
And you're just going to disregard my donuts idea?
I mean, listen, I like
That's
donuts.
So you, isn't it?
I like donuts. I'm a fan of donuts, be they the snack, or the J Dilla album. I'm a fan of donuts in all contexts. Yeah, I just wonder whether glazing is too. Well, let's do it. Let's see if you're
and
happy
then,
with
oh,
glazing.
Oh, and then if you're a super fan, you could be double glazing.
Yeah, fine. Okay. Well, hang on a second. They're donuts and double glazers. You've mixed your metaphors here. It's windows and confectionery. Pick one, Khan. Pick
okay,
one.
Okay. Well, let's.
It's
got to
be donut. We'll go with donuts.
Go
we'll
with
start referring to them as donuts
okay,
from now on.
Okay.
Watch me immediately forget that.
No, oh, wow. Okay.
The producers have all booed in our ear, and they kind of all did it at the same time, and it did create a weird harmony effect.
Yeah, it was quite pretty. Okay, we won't do donuts then.
They like suckers. They like suckers.
They want suckers.
They want pea suckers. That doesn't sound right. Pea suckers, that's not correct.
In what world? I mean, donuts is cute like a Muppet is Q.
Yeah.
Sucker. I mean, that's objectively an insult.
Yeah, our producers have contempt for you.
Yeah.
The listeners.
Clearly. Okay, so more questions. So Vulcan Nerd has asked, stranded on an uninhabited island, what is the one food you two wouldn't be able to live without? As a lover of all kinds of curries, Indian, Japanese, Thai, etc., that would be my answer because it also lets me cheat by covering all of the types.
Oh, so Vulcan Nerd has gone curries?
Yeah, because it's so broad.
That's actually really smart.
Yeah, it's clever.
That's an incredible loophole.
Mm.
Vulcans are very clever. We know. We know Mr. Spock was clever. And if you're a nerd within the Vulcan community, that means you're double smart.
So, I mean, if we're in the spirit of loopholes, I mean, you would just say bread. Because then you can take in pizza. You can take in other breads I can't think of right now.
The thing, the problem is that a lot of the other
croissant.
Breads, you're like, you are... The thing with pizza is that it is bread that's delivering you something. It would be a struggle, I think, to... I think it'd be a struggle to call pizza a bread, even though it's a bread base. I think you're going to struggle to get that past. But I guess if we're on an uninhabited island, you can set whatever rules you want.
Yeah. I mean, on a serious note, the one food I wouldn't be able to live without would be probably my mum's chicken curry.
Yeah.
I have like an emotional relationship to it.
Yeah.
When I smell it going, it makes me feel at home.
Yeah. My mum's okra curry, I would say.
We're all just picking curry. It's so boring.
Yeah, but it is delicious, and we are brown. That's brown prerogative. That's BP.
I know, and it's like stereotype. Do you not?
I would really struggle to go fully without pizza.
Okay.
I think it would be a real struggle for me to completely abandon pizza. I'm thinking about pizza right now.
Okay.
I'll be honest with you. Listen, I'm a big fan of Breadstall Pizza. There's one in Clapham. They've just opened a new one. They're not sponsoring me. They're genuinely not, but I'm a big fan of Breadstall Pizza. If you're in South London in Clapham, or if you happen to find yourself in Soho where they have a new branch, Breadstall Pizza is tremendous.
It's amazing to see, because I'm looking at you in real life.
Yeah.
You have a real glint in your eye, like you're talking about a holiday romance. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I met her, it was in Greece. It's a pizza, bro.
I don't know how to tell you about it. After this, I have to go and have lunch with my agent, and I am beginning to think about suggesting we go to Breadstall Pizza.
Right, okay, let's move on.
I also would say Mama Do. That's another South London pizza chain.
Yep.
400 Rabbits, amazing pizza.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good pizza, guys. Yard Sale.
Okay.
There's a lot of good pizza in London.
Yes. So, from Zach... Zach says, have to say it's interesting that suddenly Count Binface is all over the news and on the same week Nish is taking some time off, given this and the quality of Count Binface's comedic timing. This does seem suspicious.
Yeah, it is interesting that people suspect me of being Count Binface, largely because everyone knows who he is.
No, it's not like, you know, when we didn't know who Banksy was.
Yeah, no. It's not like that. I think we do know who Banksy is now as well.
We do know who Banksy is. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, Count Binface's identity I don't think has ever been secret, right?
No. It's a Wikipedia page, it says it right there.
Yeah, Jonathan David Harvey.
Yeah.
I've met him.
Yeah.
I've met him not as Binface.
But I mean, like, it must be complimentary to you to be misattributed to Binface. I mean, he's quite a force of nature in politics and, you know, I mean, is it a compliment?
I think it would just be weird for me to suddenly anonymise myself.
I just don't think you'd ever wear a bin.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
It'd stress me out.
You're very temperature conscious.
Yeah, I'm very temperature conscious. Yeah. I don't think I'd have the tolerance that Count Binface has to like maintain the persona without telling someone to go fuck themselves. But I think that'd be a real issue for me.
Yeah.
Count Binface responds very much sort of in kind.
Right, okay. Next question from Casey Gecko. What are your five favourite films of the year so far? I don't know what Casey Gecko thinks, but I'm not seeing that many films.
Well, I think that might be more directed at the childless.
Yeah, yeah.
The
yeah.
childless stand up comedian
people.
who spends a lot of his time in the cinema. I mean, I really love The Secret Agent. There's a couple of movies that came out kind of because they came out they were part of the awards run. People saw them last year, but they actually didn't get released formally in the UK. I think The Secret Agent is brilliant. The Brazilian movie with Wagner Moura is really, really interesting and unique movie. A movie called If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You with Rose Byrne, which I actually would not suggest that you watch, only because friends of mine that have recently had children, one of my friends watched it and said it was a bit too much. It was a bit too close to her. It's like Die My Love. It's like a motherhood horror movie. It's like a motherhood as horror movie. With Rose Byrne, brilliant, brilliant. Mary Bronstein, really, really brilliant movie. I really loved The Invite. Slightly, without maybe not necessarily totally anticipating to. I thought The Invite was just sort of spectacular. I thought it was really funny. I thought it was oddly moving. I think the performances are really great. She's directed the hell out of it. Like, it looks great. It's really, really well. It's really well written. I thought that, those three were really great. The Odyssey is an insane spectacle. I watched it in IMAX, of course, on day one of release. There's a Canadian movie called Blue Heron, which I thought was a really very special, quite very sad, but very brilliantly made film that is about a woman reflecting on her childhood and her brother who had some kind of unspecified behavioural problems that they didn't really understand because it was 25 years ago. And it's about her, it sort of flashes back and she dramatises that time and it sort of has, it's a really special film. At the other end of the seriousness spectrum, Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie has some of the dumbest jokes I've ever seen in any film. And also has a couple of stunts that I don't understand how they've managed to achieve, especially on the budget the film's been made for. So I think that is maybe six or seven. Mm-hmm. But there's been some really good ones this year. Yeah,
you're so highbrownish. Can you not? Why can't you just, for relatability, just be like, oh, Scary Movie 6?
Well, I'm going to see Spider-Man tonight.
Oh yeah.
So like, it's, you know, it's highbrow and lowbrow.
Go
also,
see the Spider-Man.
The Odyssey is basically a Batman movie. I will not elaborate on that right now. I don't have time to elaborate
Batman
on that right
and
now. But like, it is. I think it's. Yeah, I think that he's learned a lot from the superhero movies.
So this is from Olivia. Nish, your season on Taskmaster is one of the greatest. You are one of my favorite contestants ever, and I'm always seeing you. Brackets, Do Cool Stuff, is a straight-up banger that still gets sung on repeat in my house. I'm presuming that's a song that you did, right?
It's a song that I co-wrote and performed with Mark Watson as one of our tasks on the show Taskmaster.
Oh, amazing. Well, what was your favourite task?
It was probably to doing that. There was also a task where I dumped several buckets of yoghurt on Watson from the top of a cherry picker, which was really fun. My whole time on that show was great. I actually went back to the Taskmaster house. You can watch it on YouTube, on the Taskmaster official YouTube. I went back to the house and reviewed a bunch of my tasks as part of a feature that they're doing with previous contestants on the show called My Perfect Taskmaster episode. The song is probably my favourite, but for a fuller answer to that question, for a sort of, I think, 40-minute long answer to that question, go to the Taskmaster YouTube page.
Don't you think it's fascinating that so far we've had no political questions? I don't really know what to make of that.
Also, as I was replying to the top five films thing, I did think, wow, this is more serious than I talk about the news. I take this more seriously.
Maybe there was an expectation you'd talk about political films like Melania.
Have you watched any films this year?
I actually haven't.
Because you don't have time.
No, you've got a young child. Yeah, yeah.
No, I don't think anyone's watched Melania. I'm not convinced Brett Ratner has watched Melania. and he directed it.
He didn't need to. He got that Amazon money. That's all that matters.
To be fair to Brett Ratner, he was too busy fending off allegations that he was a close personal associate of Jeffrey Epstein. Big year for Ratner. Big year. The Melania doc and a photograph of him with Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh my goodness. Big year. Okay, so this one is from Sally. They say it's not Al Khan. I 100% thought it was Al Khan, like Nish did. I didn't know he was a white dude at all. This is a consequence of getting all your news from podcasts. So thank you for setting the record
straight.
We've
got to hit the S much harder. Al Khan's.
Yeah.
But the problem is I didn't hear the S. I just kept hearing people talk about Al Khan. I was like, who's this brother?
Yeah. What's Uncle up to?
Yeah.
So Sally asks, if you were to start another podcast that's not about current affairs or politics, what would it be? What would you do if you weren't doing a current affairs or politics podcast?
Probably a film podcast, although I do sort of do a film podcast. Once a year, I do a episode of Brett Goldstein's Films to Be Buried With, where we review our favourite movies of the year. So that normally comes out. It's obviously supposed to be the calendar year. It normally comes out in May.
Yeah.
Because that's how long it takes us to align our various schedules. But yeah, I probably do a film podcast. I'd love to do a music podcast. I should probably do a football podcast, only because it would mean that there was some value to the amount of fucking football I watch.
Mm-hmm.
I've recently made an appearance on Moose Rock Wonga, friend of the show, Moose Rock Wonga's Stadio podcast, where I talked about football at length. And my partner did say, this is sort of you at your happiest.
Oh,
you talking about football tactics. Me talking about football tactics with my brother on a WhatsApp call is sort of me like a pig in shit. What's the podcast Coco Khan would start?
I mean, I don't know. I'm so fulfilled by this podcast, I couldn't possibly.
Yeah, it's quite difficult to conceive of doing another podcast.
Yeah, it sort of feels weird, like when you're in a marriage, being like, yeah, but if you were going to have a different marriage, who would it be? Obviously, I am interested in chicken shops as a cultural facet of Britain and all its diversity, and also things that are maybe wrong with it. And you know, I've got fascination with bins, public toilets.
You should do a bin podcast.
Sewers. I like sewers as well.
What do you? I don't think I've ever heard you mention sewers.
What do you mean? I'm always talking about sewers.
Really?
Yeah.
Bins, yes. Chicken shops, yes.
I've not talked to you about sewers.
No.
Oh, that's a shame. Basically, what you need
What's
to know
What's your
about
interest in sewers?
Well, they're Victorian, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we really need an update on our sewers. And they link very closely to toilets, obviously.
You like the fact that's part of why, the reason why the Fatberg happened, right? It's just the irrigation system can't really cope with what it's being asked to deal with.
But don't you think, like, you know, when you think about fossil fuels, right? So fossil fuels are made out of dinosaurs that are in the crust of the earth.
Yeah.
Nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
But like, there's a berg of fat from decades under London that has crystallized.
Yeah.
Also, I just think it's mental.
So is your interest in the improvements we need to make to the sewage system or the history of sewage?
I think history of sewage. I've really gone down this sewage line.
Coco Cards, the history of sewage.
But don't you think just like...
Let's get Goalhanger on the phone. Let's get Lineker on the phone. The rest is sewage.
I can assure you, I have spoken to Goalhanger about my various ideas from sewage.
The rest is sewage.
But no, but like, do you not find like public infrastructure tantalising?
I guess
Imagine you had a life and then overnight it was improved.
I'm interested in public infrastructure. I would say I'm not as interested in public infrastructure as you are.
I just think it's crazy and great. These massive improvements that we've made as a society,
yeah,
and they
yeah,
now
yeah.
live in the background because we don't even notice them.
But that's part of the problem, right? Because we haven't thought about them long enough.
We're actually neglecting them.
But yeah.
There's like an opportunity to really change that.
Lineker.
And I've just
You heard
just
it here
amazing.
First. Who would be your ideal sewage podcast co-host?
But like, if you think so, let me just keep musing about this. But you know how a few people always say, the style people of the world always say, dress upwards. Start with the shoes, dress upwards.
I didn't realise that was
Well, you can always tell someone, that's always the weak spot of many men, is the shoes.
Really?
Oh, yes, famously.
Is that true?
Famous.
Oh, that's
Absolutely
interesting.
Absolutely famous.
Because
Look
I feel
at
like
a man's foot.
I feel like that's the only thing a lot of the straight men I know actually sort of take an interest in.
Because it's trainers.
Trainers,
right? Well,
yeah.
That's good. That's fine. But for a lot of men, they're wearing a bad shoe.
Oh, is this what Amy Nett, my life partner, refers to as the match of the day shoe?
Yeah.
It's like a type of trainer that has a completely thick white base and then is black. And Amy always says that is a match of the day shoe because the pundits on Match of the Day are often wearing that shoe.
Mm.
And she says that's a bad that's bad shoes.
Yes. I'm also generally against the sockless shoe. I find that egregious personally, on a personal level.
Yeah, I agree with
but
that.
But in the same way that, you know, you start from the bottom up in politics and in style.
Yeah.
Same for...
Why did you do a Mrs. Thatcher voice there? You did like a weird Maggie Thatcher voice there. A little Margaret Thatcher voice.
But if we want to make society better, we have to look at the sewers
and
go up. Maybe not go up, but just do all the directions. But no, look at the sewers.
I love that. Well, who is your ideal co-host for the rest of sewage?
Gary Lineker.
Gary Lineker.
I just made it up because of the shoe.
Well, Lineker did famously shit himself. like during a football match. I'm not making this up.
Paula Radcliffe.
No, I'm not thinking of Paula Radcliffe. Lineker was Radcliffe before Radcliffe. Lineker shat himself during an England football match.
Why?
Intestinal. There was an intestinal issue. I don't think it was. I don't think it was to distract the opposition.
Protest.
Yeah. It wasn't because he was upset about a VAR call.
Right, okay.
It wasn't because he was trying to like distract the opposition goalkeeper during a penalty shootout. No, I think he lost some control.
Right.
So perfect. The rest is sewage. Gary Lineker and Coco Khan.
Oh my God.
To all podcast platforms from January.
Sounds
get it
great.
Wherever you get your podcatchers. The rest is sewage is brought to you by Who Gives a Crap, the toilet paper company. It's got an inbuilt sponsor.
Oh my God, this is brilliant.
It's got an inbuilt sponsor. Hello, everyone. This is Nish. The reason that you're hearing and or seeing this is because I forgot to plug my tour on the last podcast. I am touring the UK and Ireland from September to November of this year, the year of our Lord 2026, and tickets are available now at nishkumar.co.uk. Why did I forget to promote the tour? Hard to say. This is the kind of shark-like CEO thinking that's brought me to the position I am in my career. Tickets available at nishkumar.co.uk. PodSave the UK is brought to you by Shopify.
If you've been sitting on a business idea, this might be the nudge you need. Shopify makes it easy to get started with everything you need to start selling included from day one.
One of the biggest worries is, what happens when someone actually wants to buy? Shopify checkout's got that covered, helping more customers complete their purchase. And when they come back, their details are already saved. So it's one tap and they're done.
Which means you don't have to spend time stressing about getting paid. That's already figured out, leaving you free to focus on your products, your customers, and growing your business.
And you're in good company. Shopify powers millions of businesses worldwide, from some of the biggest brands out there to people launching their very first idea. It's the same trusted platform, whatever stage you're at.
With Shopify, nothing stands between your idea and a real business. So go make it one.
Start your free trial at shopify.co.uk/podsavetheuk.
That's shopify.co.uk/podsavetheuk.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
So the next one, I'll read the next one. The next one is at MichaelPad2001. Now we have to ask, does that mean Michael was born in 2001? Or is Michael a fan of Stanley Kubrick? Anyway, he said, love the podcast. If you two were to create your own political party, what would be the three main flagship policies of the political party? He then has a follow-up question. How hopefully that Andy Burnham will be a better PM than Starmer on issues like Gaza, cost of living, public services, etc. So, first, answer the first question first, Minister.
Okay, I'm going to create my own political party. My three main flagship policies would be childcare as infrastructure, rather than childcare as like a personal cost. See it like roads, see it like schools, see it as hospitals.
Good policy.
You know, that sort of thing. What else would I do? Probably look at social care as well, getting that actually working and functioning for our aging population.
Yeah.
And then I would also just like to have a policy where if you are very, very rich, your face has to be published and we have to know what you look like so that people can follow you around.
I think we kind of have that.
What are you
Times,
talking about?
The Times Rich List.
Okay, fine. We have the Times Rich List. But, you know, I remember reading about Thames Water and being so furious about all the money that had been extracted and sent off to, like, billionaires around the world. And reading report after report, and no one named, gave me the name of, obviously I'm mad, so I went and tried to find it and look at a picture of them, put it on the wall. I'll remember you, mate. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's a part of me that the invisibility, whereas, I don't know, you put a cat in a bin one time, that's a bad example. She was very notorious, that lady. But, you know, other people get their face plastered around the world for much less.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I think
so.
That.
I think that there should be some sort of flagship policy of, if you earn over a certain amount, we must know your face.
But it is pretty, I think it's a difficult policy to get over the line.
I don't think there will be a lot of agreement.
But I do. The only thing that I think is genuinely, the thing that I think is genuinely workable in there is
wanted posters. What about that?
No, it would be the BBC. The BBC has to publish the salaries of its highest, however many earners. And the logic to that is it's a publicly funded body. So I think the thing you could genuinely get over the line is publishing the names of people that own our public infrastructure. You know, who owns Thames Water, who owns the railways, that sort of thing is, that I think genuinely, I think that is a workable policy.
Because obviously, talking in a serious way about this tongue-in-cheek policy, I think there would be a concern that it would be in some way incitement to these people to these people. So I think that would be the argument that they would return. But like you say, I mean, there's precedent for it. And I just think people should know. I hate the way that we talk about business like they're a human being.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm writing a piece at the minute about private equity and just like, you know, there's some of the pushback. It's like, oh, you know, imply wrongdoing of this sector. They're just good people. I'm like, private equity is not a person with feelings. It is a system. Yeah. I don't care about it. You know, whereas actual human beings who are being affected by it are actual human beings.
Yeah.
So anyway,
But then for the sake of playing devil's advocate, the idea of publishing individuals that have that kind of ownership is maybe taking away from the systemic factors that allow them, and it's putting more emphasis on just these individual people as individual people, and not actually the policy doesn't actually address what it needs to address, which is why is private equity allowed to buy up so much of our...
I guess I just mean that, like, you know, when people talk about celebrities and the invasion of privacy, is obviously outrageous and far too high and very heavily weighted towards terrifying women. But, you know, one of the things that people say is like, it's the cost of doing business. You enjoy the privileges of fame, this is what you... And I feel if you enjoy the privileges of extracting wealth from a nation, the cost of doing business is we know your name.
That's why I think the thing that's workable about it is if they own elements of our public infrastructure. That's the thing that I think is genuinely workable as policy.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it wouldn't get... It's weird because on the one hand, it's not individuals, it's a system, but they seem to have it both ways, right, in the best ways, you know.
Yeah.
That we have to protect their identities because of their individuals, but then when it's a system, we have to talk about it like they have feelings and not be too rude about the bankers. Anyway, moving on. What about you? What's your main policy?
Oh, just, you know, mandatory GCSE and Bob Dylan. Free Outkast CDs for everyone when they turn 18. Price cap on cinema tickets.
That's it? That's what you go for?
Probably.
I feel like you had the benefit of going second there. I got pushed into earnestness and I don't think that's quite fair. How hopeful are you that Andy Burnham will be a better PM than Starmer on issues like Gaza, cost of living, public services?
Well, listen, it's hard to think of how he could be a worse Prime Minister in some ways. Only because, again, you're listening to this a couple of weeks after we've recorded it, and we were just sort of we talked a little bit about Andy Burnham's first couple of weeks as Prime Minister, as it had got to on the 29th of July when we're recording this. And one of the things that interests me is that he has done some things, and I think I would contrast that with the sort of legislative inertia around the first 6 months of Starmer's tenure as Prime Minister. I think in terms of Gaza, it remains to be seen. Like, I think it would be an important... I think in terms of short-term levers he could pull, I think ending the proscription of Palestine Action as a terrorist group and moving to commute the prison sentences, or in some cases get rid of entirely the prison sentences of people who were charged for that, I think that would be a really, really important step. I think the proscription of Palestine Action is such an egregious legislative overreach, especially from a fucking government that couldn't get anything else done, that was so ineffective in so many areas. The speed with which they moved on that issue, and again, listeners to this podcast know this, I'm just reminding you of something you already know. Starmer, as a human rights lawyer, defended protesters who had... brought criminal damage to military equipment. He defended that. So then for him to become Prime Minister, for him to prescribe Palestine Action as a terrorist organisation, I think is a disgrace, especially when you consider the total inertia in so many other areas, like, for example, the cost of living crisis, like, for example, the public services. I remember us on this show talking about the fact that around sort of November time, they were talking about a consultation on what to do about the NHS. What the fuck is wrong with you? Why don't you have a plan? Mm. Why have you got no plan for any of this stuff? So just the fact that Andy Burnham has done something, I think, is immediately an improvement, right? But I think it's really politically important for the Labour Party and the Democrat Party to understand who its base is and also to understand that it can actually do things. So often we see Republicans and the Conservative Party in the US and the UK come into power and completely reshape the entire country in 20 minutes. And then we see the Labour Party or the Democrats come into power and struggle and get caught in quagmires. And I think it's really important that he engages with his base. I think it's important. And I think it's also important that he shows people that politics can actually be transformative, because it can be transformative. It's so far in the last 15 years been transformative in a bad way. And if you think about what the coalition was able to achieve in terms of destroying the kind of machinery of the state in this country in the early 2010s. I just don't know how hopeful I am. I think that I'm hoping that the Labour Party is listening to its base.
Hmm.
And I think that if it listens to its base, then it will act quickly on issues like Gaza, and also it will act on issues like cost of living and public services. You know, I hate to keep bringing up Mamdani, but if you look at Mamdani, what he's doing, Mamdani understands that there is no contradiction in his base of voters. They want justice for the people of Palestine, and they want cheaper groceries. And those two things are not contradictory. And in fact, they should be at the heart of the agenda for any progressive government, be it local or national, at this moment in time.
Mm. I mean, hopeful. As a person, I am hopeful. I am cautious to use the word because it sounds like an endorsement of Andy Burnham as some great saviour, which I don't necessarily believe. You know, systems aren't neutral. It's not like if we just get our guy in that suddenly everything's fine. The system at the minute is very much created in benefit of big money, in benefit of big superpowers globally, and there'll be a lot of pressure on any leader who wants to kind of pull away from that. And in the past, we've seen that that means watered down policies and disappointment, blah, blah, blah. Where it has worked is normally people holding those politicians to account, really getting involved, having movements themselves, having organizations themselves. And so as long as Andy Burnham is open to that, then I try to be optimistic that something can be achieved. It is too early to say as we record this right now, but I think your point about Palestine Action is a really good one, because that speaks to a disconnect between people and power, right?
Yeah.
Like very clearly. I mean, there's loads of examples of that, but we see that very clearly. People talk about Andy Burnham being a people pleaser. If he is a pleaser to the actual people, then that's great. You couldn't ask for more, right? Hoping for the best, I think, is probably what I would say. So the next one is from Steve Reba, 3358. Do you think there's 3,357 other Steve Rebas?
No, I think Steve Reba's accidentally put their PIN number in the £2.
Steve wants to ask, who would you appoint to be ambassador to the US to deal with Donald Trump?
I think maybe it's a mistake to use the phrase deal with Donald Trump. I think we've just got to put whoever we think the best and most qualified candidate is in for that job, for the job of being British ambassador to America, not being British ambassador to Donald Trump.
And you're going to say John Oliver now?
No, he's American.
John Oliver?
Oliver's an American citizen now.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think he must be dual US and UK. I mean,
well, it sounds perfect.
I just think get a diplomat. Get somebody who is the best person to be the UK's ambassador to the US, not the UK's ambassador to Donald Trump. We've got to stop, because the last time we made a decision on that basis, we ended up sending in Peter Mandelson. So stop thinking of the country of the US as being totally indivisible from Donald Trump. You can't flatter this man. You cannot flatter him. You can flatter him, but it won't last. It won't count for anything in the long run. You've got to stop. You know, we talk to our bosses, even though they maintain they're not our bosses. But when we talk to people like Ben Rhodes or Tommy Vietor, they keep saying you've got to stop thinking you can flatter your way to Trump's approval.
Mm.
You can't do it. He could have a complete change of heart. The best thing you've got to do when you're looking at your ambassador to the US is who is going to be best served to represent your country's interests. And I'm sorry, representing our country's interests is not stoking Donald Trump's ego at the moment.
So I return to the question, John Oliver.
I would not put that pressure on John.
Okay.
He's got enough going on with Last Week Tonight. Also, I like Last Week Tonight as a comedy show, and I don't want him to stop having to do that because
I'm just saying he's a British man. He's gone to America. He's somehow created a decent career criticizing
decent
America.
Decent career? I think he's got 300 Emmys.
Okay. A brilliant, enviable career criticizing America. That seems like a good person for ambassador.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's put it to him.
Yeah, let's see. If you're listening, John Oliver, just something to think about. Okay, and then Steve also wants to ask, is there anyone from our own lives who is eligible for our fantasy cabinet, e.g. Mama's Chancellor? Sorry, I'm just laughing about that. My mother would absolutely not be the right person for Chancellor. David Attenborough is Environment Secretary, et cetera, et cetera.
I think it's a shame that my partner is a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. I think she would have been a good Prime Minister.
Oh, what a lovely thing to say.
Well, she's a very good communicator. People really like her and trust her. I think she would have been a fantastic Prime Minister or cult leader. I could definitely envisage a world in which Amy Annette was a sort of, you know, David Koresh type figure. Or a sort of benign L. Ron Hubbard.
But, I mean, like, stand-up comedians, they have that ability, don't they?
No, they don't. We do not have that ability. Zelensky's a one-off.
Apparently, Michael Gove was a comedian for a bit, did sketch comedy.
I mean, there's a university thing everybody does. Everybody, if you go to Oxford or Cambridge, it seems like everyone gets a go at it. It doesn't mean that they're a comedian. I mean, I wouldn't want my mum to be Chancellor. The country wouldn't spend any money on anything.
Oh my goodness.
She's so frugal. You can't get an Asian mum to be Prime Minister.
Oh really?
I've
got the complete opposite with my mum. My
really?
Mom, yeah. My mum likes to spend. She loves a bargain. I don't know if I should put this in because it's going to be read as a criticism about my mum who I love and adore. But you know, time is money, right?
That is a criticism of my mother. I hope she hears it.
If you spend 2 days getting something for £10 that would otherwise be £15. It's true, you've saved £5, but you've lost 2 days.
And there's a cost attached to that.
And I think that's where my mum wouldn't be a good chancellor.
Yeah.
It's things like that. That sort of resourcing.
I'd like to get someone with a climate science background to be in frontline politics. I think the fact that Claudia Sheinbaum, you know, is like president of Mexico is like a good precedent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think that is a really, you know, I do think that is, you know, that is the sort of biggest challenge facing all of us right now. You know, I'd like to see someone like Rasena Alan Khan get a go, you know, in the health department.
Mm.
She's a doctor. She knows the challenges. I think, interestingly, there is a lot of interesting resource already within our body politic.
Mm.
But, you know.
But whether we use it is a different story. Also, while you were talking, I had an idea for another podcast.
Which is?
The Rest is Pest, about pest control.
We've got to stop thinking about podcasts that can only be on Goalhanger. We've got to start thinking of crooked media podcasts.
But don't you think pest control is another one of those, like, stories of a society?
Yeah.
There are so many rats.
Yeah.
In London and across the UK.
It's their city. We sort of rent space from the rats.
I just think it's a very fascinating issue. It's also a future-proof job. I really thought, if I wasn't so squeamish, maybe when media's fully collapsed, I'd be a pest controller.
Okay.
Anyway.
No, the only reason I said okay is I just looked ahead to the next question, and tonally, it's quite the shift.
Okay.
Thank you very much to Zoe YG3084. Is the UK's issue with xenophobia less about the economics of immigration and more about the deliberate starvation of our community and cultural spaces? Yes.
That is a tone shift, definitely.
Listen, I do think that that's a big part of it. You know, I think that if you sort of decimate the spaces into which communities can come together and cohere, then there is a strong possibility that is going to have a negative impact on community cohesion. You know, if you think about like the sort of collapse of like youth clubs, if you think about the loss of public libraries, we're losing a lot of our public spaces where people from different backgrounds do sort of come together and meet each other. But I do think our issue with xenophobia I think it's massively, you know, there's like long historic roots, you know, we sort of grew up fetishizing the British Empire, which was a kind of, you know, sort of racist project that fundamentally was an expression of the idea that only white people know how to run the world properly. And so they have a God-given right to run as much of it as they possibly can. So that, you know, in some ways, it's not surprising that we have all these institutional racism issues. You know, we're only like, barely 100 years out from the end of the empire. Why would we have turned that around? You know, if the British Empire operated for 250 years and we're barely halfway out of that period of time from it. So, but also I do think that, you know, it's not a particularly new problem. Anytime there is an economic downturn, you see a kind of uptick in anti-immigrant rhetoric because immigrants are a convenient scapegoat to put the blame on. You know, if you want to be angry with anybody for the current state of this country, you should start with David Cameron and George Osborne, not with, you know, not with asylum seekers coming in on small boats or immigrant communities.
Mm. God, I long for the days of an actual scapegoat, innit? I mean, like some sort of effigy that you can be like, all our problems, and then we just drive them out. And
Those,
bring back rituals. okay, let's move on to this voting question from EveJ404. Theoretically, what would happen if absolutely no one voted in the Clacton shit show? That's EveJ's words.
Okay, so mercifully, our producers have answered this for us, and we're not going to have to try and vibe this one out. So if no one voted in Clacton, it would mean that the candidates were tied with zero votes each. So in any election, a vote count resulting in a tie could cause a recount, but for no votes, it would be a case of deciding the winner at random.
Wow. So the returning officer in charge of the count would decide. That could be done by tossing a coin, drawing straws, or pulling a name out of a hat.
So there are 34 candidates in the Clacton by-election. So no one's odds are looking good if draws are drawn. It's thought to be the highest number of candidates to stand in a by-election in the modern era. The previous record was 26 in 2008. There are a whopping 3 monster-raving loony party candidates, including Nick the Incredible Flying Brick and Howling Lord Hope.
Yeah, there's also Marcus White from the Everyone Is God party. I had a brief look into Everyone Is God party, and I think it's just very, very sex positive. then there's the woke Trump Kazi, independent candidate. Isn't Lawrence Fox in it as well?
I think. Count Binface has never secured more than 1% of the vote in any election, but based on this panoply of candidates, you must feel he's got a chance of getting a higher one.
God, must be weird if you're in Clacton, isn't it? These are your candidates.
Yeah.
It's funny for a second and then maybe feel a bit bad. So winning an uncontested stronghold against novelty candidates will do little to answer the concerns. You know, Farage wanted this. He wanted a spectacle and he's got it, basically. So
yeah, but I do think that this is not the spectacle he wanted.
No.
I think this isn't the spectacle that he wanted, because I think it's made him look stupid. And he's going to look even stupider if... because if he wins the by-election, he returns to Westminster and the inquiry into his failure to declare donations resumes.
Mm-hmm.
And if that inquiry finds that there is evidence of wrongdoing, then there is a chance that the people of Clacton can force another by-election.
Yeah.
So he could have 2 by-elections in a year. And I think that makes him look dumb. Okay, so the producers have found a picture of the Everyone Is God party, and it is a man sort of wearing quite a tight shirt and a lady in, I guess, the Jerry Halliwell, Ginger Spice, Union Jack mini dress.
Mm. Yes. I don't want to speculate on these guys, but they have a bit of a sort of pampas grass and swinger energy. It does feel a bit pampas grassy.
Listen, we're very sex positive on this podcast. Just not for ourselves. we're happy being consumed by shame.
Okay, so now we're on to the personal opinions and advice section. So at that dude called and they say, "Hi guys, I've been a huge fan ever since I found you a year ago. I'm British Canadian. I moved to Canada 1 month after Brexit. I was upset with the vote. My Canadian side of the family is very right-leaning, whereas I'm very left-leaning. My aunt and uncle make jokes about immigrants in the trans community. They're racist towards Indians, which is a huge problem over here, and they support Israel. I find it extremely difficult to have them in my life, but cutting them out would mean I wouldn't be going to any family functions as they host almost all of them. Do you have any advice on how to deal with it? Is there any point in trying to bring them around? Should I take up meditation? Any insights would be great. Much love to you and have an awesome day." Imagine if this person took up meditation, but in a really Indian way. Got really super into yoga, super into meditation. Didn't say anything though, but I just... There's something there, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is sort of the question, right?
Yeah.
And it sort of manifests itself in different ways. It does feel like that families have been, you know, I feel like when I was growing up, you had like Labour families.
Conservative
family. And like you had a kind of familial political identity. And then there were these sort of fissures that have opened up. But maybe that's wrong. Maybe actually there was always a tension. I mean, if you think about, you know, like the premise of, you know, like All in the Family was a sitcom based around the generational tension. And it was based on a British sitcom called Love Thy Neighbour. And it was sort of based on the generational tension between, you know, the kind of 60s baby boomers and their like World War II parents who, you know, the tension around social progress happened in the 1960s. So it's recency bias for me, but it does feel a bit like Brexit, Trump, Modi, these are issues that kind of cut through families in a really sort of interesting way. I'm actually not allowed by my mother into my Indian family WhatsApp group because she said it's already bad enough with your cousins fighting with your uncles and aunts about Modi. You will only make it worse. Direct quote. Direct quote from my mother. I think it's a really hard thing to balance, right? Because you don't want to lose family members from your life. But also I sort of think I have a responsibility, you know, like sort of easy for me to say, because I have cut some family members out whose politics did not agree with me, but that's not why I cut them out. I cut them out because they were fucking dicks. totally separate to politics, like totally separate to politics. They were just not very nice people. And so it's easy for me in some ways because it's like I didn't really have to negotiate that because separate to their political beliefs, separate to their political beliefs, they were just mean people.
Yeah.
So in some ways it's like it was kind of convenient for me, and I guess it would be interesting if they were mean and they had the same politics as me, how would I have managed that sort of you know, but I also think, you know, within a family, you should be able to have, I do think you should be able to have constructive political conversations, because at the end of the day, there is part of me that thinks, obviously you want people to get along, and I'm not advocating falling out with your families over it. But at the same time, if you see people, especially if you see people voting against their own interests, it's hard to not want to try. If you love somebody, it's hard to not want them to not vote against their interests. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, working class families where the parents are voting for reform, you know, that is going to be a vote against your own, that is a vote against your own interests. I'm thinking about, you know, the Indian families that are thinking of voting reform, you know, that's voting against your own interests. You know, all these kind of Hindu Indians that voted for Trump, believing that he was going to help them, and then he deported a whole load of Indian kids, like Indian students. I always think if you really love your family members, don't you sort of have a responsibility to stop them from voting for things that, and you can't stop people will vote the way they want to vote, but engaging in some persuasion, and like persuasion is not screaming at people. That's not going to win anybody round. But I think it's really hard. I think it's really, really difficult to, I think you can have political differences with people, but I think it also comes down to what you think is a political difference, because I do think political diversity of opinion is really interesting. And I think that there are conversations that you can have. But I think when you're talking about like people's basic right to humanity, that shouldn't be a political question. Mm. We should have transcended, you know, the like rights of the LGBTQIA community. That shouldn't, we shouldn't be saying potato, potato on that. Come on, what are we doing? Like, racism is not an issue we should be saying, oh, I welcome the diversity of opinion. No. Mm. That's not a these shouldn't be political questions. It shouldn't be a one party says this. We should. I thought we all agreed that Martin Luther King is a hero. I thought we all agreed that Nelson Mandela was a hero. I thought we all. I thought that was a that was supposed to be something that crossed party lines, and there were sort of issues that supersede our political beliefs because we have a more fundamental obligation to humanity. You know, and I'd put the climate in that as well.
Yeah.
Because that shouldn't be a political issue. We shouldn't be indulging in that as a, you know, you say potato, I say potato thing. There should be things that supersede political discussion.
PodSave the UK is brought to you by Vanta.
What's the one thing in business that's spreading as fast as AI? AI risk.
Every new AI tool your team adopts, every vendor that switches on AI features, every new integration, it all creates risks. And most security programs simply weren't built for AI's pace of change.
Enter Vanta.
Vanta is the number one agentic trust platform, trusted by more than 16,000 fast-moving companies like Synthesia, Nando's, and Granola to help them stay audit ready.
And now Vanta helps businesses monitor the risks that appear between audits too. The Vanta agent works like a 24/7 GRC engineer in the background, finding issues, drafting fixes, and cutting vendor assessment time by up to 50%.
It also centralizes your security processes and helps complete security questionnaires up to 5 times faster, saving your team valuable time.
Whether you're a fast-growing startup or a global enterprise, Vanta is here to help you automate your security and compliance and earn and prove trust.
Get started today at vanta.com/PSTUK.
That's Vanta, VANTA.com/PSTUK.
Hey, it's John. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics about how to fix this mess. We're doing it again, November 5th through the 7th in Washington, D.C. with even more podcast panels and workshops. Plus, there will be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get your tickets at CrookedCon.com, where we'll also announce the lineup. If you're a Friends of the Pod subscriber, a limited number of discounted tickets are still available. Get them before they run out. See you at CrookedCon.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Okay, and then lastly, from Olivia, as people immersed in political analysis every day, how do you keep the hope that a better world for everyone is achievable? What helps you wade through political shitstorms? And are there politicians that give you hope?
I defer to my more optimistic colleague.
Do you want a really an answer that's gonna you're gonna hate?
Yeah.
You give me hope, Nish.
Oh my God. Fuck me.
I just mean like, you know, friends, community.
Yeah, yeah, yes, yes.
Other people who care.
Oh, I'm much happier with that as an answer, yeah.
But, I mean, not just you on your own.
Now you understand why I was so revulsed.
But, you know, we do this thing. We get do this thing. We have an audience that listens to it. So they must share in some way some of our beliefs. So that means we're not alone. That's nice. That gives me hope.
Yeah, can I crank up the cheese factor?
Yeah, go on.
Our audience gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah.
And also not just our audience, but all our... everybody that works on the show.
Yeah.
Like, it is really inspirational. This show has afforded both of us a kind of glimpse into how many people in this country are, like, working to make it better.
Oh, absolutely. And how many brilliant ideas there are and how many like-minded people there are and how much energy there are, not just in the UK, but around the world.
Yeah.
It is scary, though. I mean, you were talking just then about, like, you know, some things shouldn't be argued about. And it reminded me of this story. So my mum, I hope she allows me to share this. I'll check. And if not, yeah. My mum is part of a Asian ladies network. It's for the over 65s ladies. I'm sure you can imagine it. Right?
Yeah.
South Asians of all stripes, and sometimes they get into sectarian troubles. But anyway, recently my mum...
Listen, we try not to have those in front of the whites. No yeah. offence.
My mum offered a compliment to Gandhi on account of all the great work that he did.
Yeah.
And she was surprised that a lot of the older Indians were very disparaging to Gandhi, because obviously Gandhi wanted a secular India and a mixed India, and obviously now with the Modification. And my mum just had this moment just sitting at the table reflecting, being like, did you know Gandhi starved himself for the freedom of... Imagine you starved yourself in your life and then your own people call you a dickhead. And I just thought to myself, God, that's awful. But perhaps that is the future for all progressives. And, you know, we're not here for glory. We're here for change, not for like...
Gandhi is an interesting one, only because, I mean, let's not get mired down too much in Indian politics, but like Gandhi is... The man who assassinated Gandhi, Nathuram Godse, was a Hindu nationalist. Like, Gandhi was killed by a Hindu who believed that he had given up, you know, a section of India and made it into Pakistan, and he'd conceded too much to Muslims. And that Godse is now... You know, from being like the most reviled figure in Indian history, is now kind of celebrated in some quarters within the BJP, the ruling party, and the RSS, which is its kind of quasi paramilitary wing, as being kind of a hero. So, like that is a really interesting one.
The reason I mention it is because, you know, you can act on something and then history is unkind and all your work is undone. But that's the job. You just keep going.
What you're saying, Coco, is you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Is that a quote from something?
The Dark Knight.
Okay. Also, just while we're here, I had a really, really good idea for solving the climate crisis.
Here we go.
Name the catastrophes Muslim names.
Why?
Because then the reform voters will support getting rid of it.
Yes, this is, as you're saying this, I'm being reminded of some of my own stand-up comedy.
Fire Cloud, that we discussed earlier in an episode. Call it Abu Bakr.
I believe, and I am reaching back into my own memory archives, I believe I've used the phrase Sharia weather. I believe I've used the phrase Sharia weather, like as a way of radicalising conservatives about the climate crisis, is to refer to it as climate immigration and say foreign weather is coming over here and ruining traditional British weather with its hot foreign nonsense. Some of it's Sharia weather.
And again, what gives me hope, like-minded people like you, Nish.
The other thing gives me hope, alcohol. Anyway.
Thank you for listening to Pod Save the UK.
Thank you so much for listening, and thanks so much for all your questions. We got to so few of them.
We did.
As I will always say, whenever we do this, we will endeavour to do this more often because it is really fun, and you guys ask incredibly meaningful and insightful questions, and some of you ask really dumb questions, and there's value to both of those.
Yes, and we appreciate that.
Yeah.
Pod Save the UK is a... Have I said that already? Do you ever get the feeling that you're...
No, you haven't said
living
that.
Living life again. Do you ever get that?
We've moved from Batman to Groundhog Day as we're leaving.
What's the one with Leonardo DiCaprio? Inception.
Inception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pod Save the UK is an Intelligence Square production for Crooked Media.
It's still unclear why Coco Khan has referred to Inception. Thanks to senior producer Esme Ash, digital producer Chelsea Nyumpingizer, and assistant producer Verity DiGala.
Our theme music is by Vasilis Fotopoulos.
The executive producers are Bea Duncan and Katie Long.
You can get in touch with us. I've lost the thought.
It's a dream within a dream.
And don't forget, you can get in touch with us. You can email podsavetheuk@crooked.com. And if you enjoyed this episode and want to feature in the next mailbag, or what about the female bag, then get your questions in. Sorry, that was such a bad joke. Oh my God, I'm so tight. It's so hot, isn't it? And you can also follow us. We're at PodSaveTheUK on Instagram, TikTok, X, and Blue Sky.
And remember to hit subscribe for new shows on Thursdays.
Hey, it's John. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at Crooked Con for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics about how to fix this mess. We're doing it again, November 5th through the 7th in Washington, D.C. with even more podcast panels and workshops, plus There will be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get your tickets at CrookedCon.com, where we'll also announce the lineup. If you're a Friends of the Pod subscriber, a limited number of discounted tickets are still available. Get them before they run out. See you at CrookedCon.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAPS sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons, from tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond. Every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.